Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Chairman of the board today is Evan Henry. Devin's getting it done. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing, depending on the day. Goody at the Movies. Goody at the Movies is today as we get ready for a big football weekend. This is a weekend where the Cardinals season, you know, a couple years ago they had the All or Nothing series, and we pointed out then it was nothing because they didn't go to the postseason. It's really shaping up to be an all or nothing weekend, because if you go 0-3, I think that I've always felt the Cardinals' traction within the community of Arizona, just the whole state, is about a mile wide and an inch deep. That when the team doesn't play well, people automatically go jump over to their teams of the past, or they just latch on to somebody else. In this market, if you go 0-3, it's ironic. The Suns on Monday, next Monday, the Suns will have their annual media day. And they'll roll DeAndre Ayton out, and suddenly people will start paying attention over there. So it is very big for them. No one's expecting Arizona State to win at Washington this weekend, so we'll talk about that. The Jimmy Butler story is really interesting to me on that front, and what Torrey Lovello did last night. So we're all over the place today, an eclectic type of show, as I like to say. We're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance. When was the last time that you just took a good, long, hard look at everything that's going on in your world and say, you know, I've got to do a better job on this front, or I at least need to start making some financial planning? It's critical you do that, and you've got to protect those that are around you. Do it with life insurance. Log on, get your free quote at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Goody at the Movies comes up in about 35, 40 minutes. All right, so the college football weekend is, as always, more interesting to me than anything else that is going on. Arizona State, I was talking with a friend the other day, someone who's been involved in college football, knows it inside and out, at one point in time wrote about it, and I've been thinking the same thing as this guy has been thinking, and that is, you look at the Pac-12 South, and it may well come down to, and in my view, probably is going to come down to the U of A ASU winner. I know you're thinking, I've jumped off the cliff. I've lost my mind. I'm completely out in left field. How can he say that? What did he have? Was his breakfast spiked? You know, I mean, what is he talking about here? It's going to come down to the U of A ASU winner. U of A is not good. ASU, you know, they're up and down. Guys, they haven't played a game yet in the Pac-12 South. You tell me, is there a team out there that you look at in the Pac-12 South after the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season and say, wow, man, they're really good? No, there's not one team. Eric, am I right on this, or am I all over the place on this one? Would you agree with me?
It's a collection of average to below average teams.
The U of A ASU game, the winner. Fearless prediction.
I like
it. September. Fearless.
I mean, both teams are going to have to play better than they have.
Do you think UCLA can pull out of their nosedive?
No.
With their freshman quarterback's daddy being quoted about how his son's not being used correct.
Just keep your mouth shut. just be a dad.
I love that story. How USC, I know the freshman quarterback is there. It's tough to win. Kid should still be in high school, right?
He should.
Still be in high school.
I would think USC still has a lot of talent. I haven't watched a lot of USC this year, but it's USC. So if the quarterback can get his head on straight and if the defense can turn it around, I would think they would probably be the favorite to win the South.
You know what USC stands for?
University of Spoiled Children.
There's that one. There's some others.
That's
the only one I can use on the air. So I look at Colorado. Colorado beat Nebraska. Nebraska's not good.
They're
right?
Okay. Yeah.
They're not good.
They're fine.
Utah?
They're fine. I mean,
it's a collection of teams that if we're talking about weak conferences or weak sides of, like, Stanford plays Oregon this week. I can't wait for that game.
You know what it is, Brad? It's a collection of teams that are not in the top 25. Like, that's pretty much what we're talking about.
There's just not one
team that we've mentioned is not in the top 25. ASU, USC, UCLA, Nebraska, Colorado. None of them are. So we're just, they're all fine. They're all fine.
But like Friday night, we're both going to be out at high school games. But part of me wants to see if USC gets boat raced or just beat by Washington State Friday night. there could be a coaching change already in the Pac-12 conference. That there's that much pressure reportedly, supposedly, on Clay Helton. There's already that much that's going on. And so the weekend ahead, while everything is about Alabama and Texas A&M nationally, and I get it, rightly so, it's Texas A&M with their new coach, and he's going to try to take down big, bad Nick Saban, and Alabama's finally playing something that's not a directional school. They're finally playing a team that you look at and say, okay, this is pretty good. Yeah, there's that. Stanford is at Oregon. Now you look at the Pac-12 North, if Washington or Stanford or Oregon, if any one of those three teams was in the Pac-12 South, they'd be runaway favorites. They would be, but they're not, so they're going to beat up on each other. College Game Day is going to be at Eugene for this one. Stanford at Oregon, that's going to be great to watch. ASU at Washington, I feel as though the Sun Devils should be the underdog. It's the road game. It's at Washington. Miles Gaskin's a terrific running back. It's funny, I was at a speaking thing with some ASU Big Cigars on Monday. And these Big Cigars stopped me as I was talking about stuff, and they said, we hear from some people at ASU that you just don't like us. You know, that you're not really a Sun Devil. And I'm like, well, no, I'm not. I'm here to cover stuff. You don't always say positive things about us. No, I don't. You're correct on it. Whoever's telling you this and is feeding you this, they're being truthful. I'm not going to sit here every week and wave pom-poms and say this is the greatest thing ever. And anybody who does is just taking your money and smiling all the way to the bank. The program has not been consistent. But to say that I've sat there and just badmouthed the program, completely false. When Herm Edwards was hired, I sat here and said, this is a great move. Just because I wasn't supportive of the last guy that was here, or the guy before him, or the guy before him at the end, for all of them, it was time to go. If there's been a consistent pattern at Arizona State, it's been a pattern of mediocrity. So go to Washington. Well, we beat the Huskies last year. Yeah, you beat the Huskies last year on a short week. Their kicker missed a couple. It was a total fluke.
They've actually beaten the Huskies 10 out of the last 11 times, believe it or not.
At Washington.
No. Just I think ASU in general has beaten them 10 out of the last 11
And
games.
I was at the game in Seattle 2 years ago. Froze my ass off.
Yes.
And they got crushed.
Yes.
But I did crush. I had heard they'd done well against them. Doesn't mean they're going to win this week.
Of course not.
I don't think that I'm hating on ASU.
You're just speaking facts. And the one thing you mentioned about all those coaches that left, the trend with ASU football is coaches never leave ASU football to take another job. Coaches are fired. No, it is. It's true. I mean, like
Dennis didn't take. Dennis went as a position coach or coordinator. Went to Utah as a coordinator,
but he was let go. It's not like a coach did really well and then jumped to go coach Ohio State or jumped to go coach USC or jumped to go coach.
Dirk Cutter didn't like it here.
A blue blood program.
Dirk didn't like it here. Didn't like the media here.
Just so much better suited for NFL where he could just nerd out and call plays and be a football
geek.
But
it was time for him to go. And when I see players that leave, like anybody who's going to support Brock Osweiler, yeah, I was one that said, what is he doing leaving? Just bailing out on this program. He's made big money and done nothing in the NFL. Is that hating? No, it's fact. It's a fact. You know, for Arizona this weekend, when they've got Oregon State, on surface, that's a game you should win, right? It's a middle of the day on a Saturday, very small audience that's going to be watching them. I still believe that U of A is going to get it figured out. BYU is better than what anybody said. So while they're trying to sit there and make Khalil Tate a thrower rather than a runner, Khalil Tate's now ranked in the top 15 in the nation in passing, believe it or not. That's true. Being tied with Southern Utah last week doesn't look like progress. They get through, they escape. So they go, you know, they've got a game this week that you look at and you say they make a few more steps in the right direction. They're not as bad as what everybody's making them out to be. I know in Tucson, because they've landed this big-time recruit in Nico Mannion for basketball, the basketball season's already started. When they do come back home to play, it'll be in front of family and friends and a few thousand fans. I'm not hating on U of A. It's just a fact. That's a fact. We don't sit here and have pom-poms and cheer and jump up and down for everybody. It's not how this works. So the football weekend, really, it's how does Herm get the Sun Devils back? Because U of A, Oregon State, meh. Washington at home against ASU, prime time. Our buddy Brock's going to do the game, Brock Huard. It's big. It's big. And there are some angles of players that ASU missed on that are sitting there in Seattle now. So very much looking forward to that. On the other side, we'll turn our attention over to the Diamondbacks. Later in the show, the Cardinals and Jimmy Butler's story on my mind, and much more before you get to Goody at the Movies. I'm Brad Sussmat. So last night, I turned my attention over to the Diamondbacks because I wanted to see if they were going to do the El Foldo, as they've been showing here over the last, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, where it's just been dreadful to watch. It's been painful on every level, and I've had fans that have taken up the task of wanting to remind me that Torey Lovello should be fired. I think that's extreme. I don't believe that that's the direction that they should go. Torey didn't forget to manage overnight. However, the owner of this team does have a tendency to look at things and make rash decisions. So last night, I liked the fact that Torey Lovello pretty much threw a lineup out there that you'd see in a B game on a side field in March. And the Diamondbacks ended up winning 9-0. They had 4 runs, 5 hits in the very first inning. And only 2 regulars ended up playing last night. It's a bigger story today about, now they have a day off, that they're able to get a game. And the Dodgers and Rockies are doing what they're doing. And Colorado is here this weekend. The Diamondbacks still have games with the Dodgers. The irony would be if the Dodgers were able to clinch here in Arizona again next week and go jump into the swimming pool again next week. That would be quite something. That would be something that many fans would not like in any way, any shape, any form. But I do think here in town and actually across the state, the interest in the Diamondbacks has completely trailed off. We are in that space of football season. And if the team isn't relevant, there needs to be something done. I saw where John Smoltz, who I think is really smart, one of the smartest people that when talking about the game of baseball, there was a time where Bob Costas was that guy where it's like he should be the commissioner of the game because he is one that is very forward thinking. John Smoltz completely ripped the game of baseball apart to Sports Illustrated. It's out today. And his point is the season's too long, which we've known. The games in September don't matter. In fact, in many divisions, the games in August now don't matter. So he is proposing some radical changes that he would like the commissioner to look at. I don't know where the players' union is going to come down on this, where Tony Clark would be. It feels as though Tony Clark and Rob Manfred just don't see eye to eye on much of anything. But John Smoltz basically said, not basically, he did say it's time to shorten the season to 154 games. It is time to get rid of interleague play. The most radical thought that he threw out, though, to make this part of the year on the calendar, baseball back, front, and center, is to split the season up into two halves, to have 2 trade deadlines, to have the winners of the first part of the season play the second half of the season. This was done during the strike years back in the 80s. And the team missed the playoffs by a game. It wasn't fair, even though they had the best record overall. It's just how things played out. I kind of like this. The idea of, you know, the Diamondbacks would have been the first half of the season winner. So they would have already had a spot in the postseason. The idea that Smoltz is throwing out is they would then play a 3-game series against the winner of the second half of the season within the division. So if it's the Rockies, they'd be playing the Diamondbacks 3-game playoff. Suddenly, August and September are much more interesting. Rather than having teams tank and take their rosters and trade them all away. Or let's take a team like Washington. They're sitting there and around August 20th, they said, we're waving the white flag because we didn't get it done. Well, if they got it done in the first half of the season, they'd at least have a chance in the second. If you were besieged by injury in the first half, you could go out and make a whole bunch of trades. If your team stinks in April and May, make some deals and try to get it done in June. But at the minimum, now you have a chance in the second half of the season. I like all of these ideas. Baseball has to do something because, yes, I went the other night to the Diamondbacks-Cubs game on Monday night. And yeah, there were more Cubs fans and Diamondback fans, but more alarmingly, the stadium still was about, I don't know, 60% empty. I thought about throwing some pictures up on the air and saying, guys, it's not about fans of teams even coming here anymore. And if you just put it through a lens of sitting and watching a Diamondback game, and I understand that baseball and all these sports leagues now tell teams what to shoot. Do not shoot high or show any empty seats. Show as many kids as you can eating popcorn and having fun at the old ball game that makes you want to go out there. Show the young college kid there with his girlfriend and how much fun they're having. Show a bunch of girls there hanging out that are 18, 19, 20 years old, because they'll be great. It's no different than the NFL ramming that stupid commercial of the lady pouring lemonade into a large container so her kid's lemonade stand can close so she can go watch the game with her two kids. Yeah, the NFL wants moms and wants kids. They're not getting Joe's six-pack. The game's really safe. Your kids need to come watch it. That's how I watch this stuff through a lens. What I see when I watch baseball games, I'm one that will watch it. Guess what? I'm white. I'm over 50. I don't have much hair left. I'm follically challenged. Unfortunately, there's people that look like me. There aren't many people when you go to the ballpark, as I was walking around the other night, that are in their 30s or in their 20s and they're hanging out. They're not. So you have to find ways to engage those people. And I feel as though in the Diamondbacks case, an idea like John Smoltz would be perfect. Because guess what? Here in summer, no one's around. This is the one market. Give me another market in all of Major League Baseball where everybody leaves. Everybody's gone in June and July. Their habits are all jacked up, and even August. So they're never really going to get Phoenix figured out. That's why, unfortunately, I still believe the Diamondbacks are going to get pursued by Las Vegas. At some point in time, Vegas is going to come after Ken Kendrick to sell the team. It's going to happen if they can't figure out a stadium solution here. It will. All this to say is, yeah, they're still in it mathematically. They'd have to sweep Colorado this weekend. The Dodgers would need to lose some games. And then next weekend, the Dodgers have to come here and they have to sweep them. And the chances of them doing that aren't good. But I like what Torrey did last night. It's, you know what, enough of this nonsense. I'm going to sit all you guys down, and we're going to go out and take care of business. He's not going to get fired. I don't think Ken's going to be overreactive. It would be crazy, in my opinion, to blow Torrey Lovello out. You have a sense of stability with your general manager and your manager. Unless behind the scenes, there's so much angst over the way that Torrey has blown up his bullpen and run right through it again. And you've got your $33 million pitcher who he sticks around with for 5 1/3 and 6 1/3 in March, or actually in April, in May, and in June. Go look at the number of complete games and the innings that Zach Greinke had earlier in the year. They're conserving him. So guess what? When you throw Archie Bradley out there in back-to-back games in Los Angeles out of the bullpen, because that's your stubborn way of doing business, you're going to get on people's radars. You just are. Where are you at on all this stuff?
Oh, I think you're dead on. I mean, it's hard because Torrey Lovello isn't the one that's throwing the pitches. He's not the one that's hitting the ball. He's not the one that's fielding the ball. He's trying to put those players in positions to succeed. Last year, he put those players in positions to succeed, and they succeeded. This year, he put them in the same position to succeed, and often they didn't succeed. So that's the gray area and the fine line when you're talking about like a manager pushing the right buttons or not. Sure, it's his decision to set the lineup, and I saw last night's lineup, and I looked at some of those names, and I was like, who is this person?
Right, who is that guy?
And then I quickly scurried over to ESPN.com, and I said, oh, they're five and a half out in the wild card, and they're like 6 1/2 out in the West. Like, yeah, they're not going to win this anyway, so it's fine. And shake it up, you know, do whatever you need to do, and it worked last night, but we'll see.
Would you be along the lines of John Smoltz?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I would like to see the season shortened. I would like to see the season start a little bit earlier, but you can't always do that because teams that play back east don't want to get snowed out if they're playing games earlier in the year. But it's the baseball purists that deal with the 162 game season and as far back as it goes, all the way into like the early 1900s. They don't want to mess with that. I don't know, stability of the game.
But the game's not stable now.
Not in that form, not at all.
So he's saying eliminate 8 games. That doesn't sound like a lot.
It's really not very many.
the whole idea of a first half of a season and a second half of the season with trade deadlines on both of those.
I do like that a lot. I would love a first half trade deadline. I would love it.
So the minor leagues do that. It's the minor league adaption is that they go 3 months, whatever the number of games is, and then the winner is there for the postseason. If you had two trade deadlines, if you did the second trade deadline, I don't know, the Tuesday after Labor Day, and before the first NFL weekend, the thing is they've lost the season. And it's not just here. Even last year, Eric, you know this. When football season starts, a lot of the audience just goes away. They just
we've talked about in the past, Brad. Like the Diamondbacks' biggest thing is they need to win the summer. And the last 2 years they have won the summer.
Yes.
But unfortunately, September has been one of their worst months. And that's the time when you want to be playing your best, especially when you do have to deal with football, because football just seems to like blanket baseball.
I am hearing the Vegas stuff again.
That wouldn't surprise me.
I'm hearing the Vegas stuff.
I mean, look at what they're doing with their other pro sports.
Yeah, if they can't figure it out here that Ken is, I mean, Ken's older. Let's not sit here and sugarcoat this. And there's people out there in Vegas that would love to get their hands on a major league franchise. All right, up next, we will this Cardinal game on Sunday against the Bears. Lance Briggs is really good at talking about the Bears, a former Great Bear, and he's also a Wildcat. So we'll talk with Lance Briggs on the other side about Bears, Cardinals, and also the U of A, and then Goody at the Movies. I'm Brad Sussmat. So Lance Briggs, we hope to have with us momentarily. I do want to get in some Suns and some basketball stuff because it is starting this coming Monday. When we get back together on Monday, it'll be Suns. Tomorrow the TV show is on in this slot, so you guys can check it out. It's just loaded this week with stuff. Good show. Monday, the Suns will be in the news cycle. And if the Cardinals lose and if ASU loses, then the Suns are suddenly going to become like the thing for people to jump on because they're going to unveil DeAndre Ayton. Even though Devin Booker is hurt, even though the timing of the Devin Booker injury stinks, even though it's a team that hasn't done anything in a long period of time, they're going to be able to roll out their shiny new object, and they should. They're going to have a new coach, and there's going to be reason for optimism and all that stuff, all that, you know, what you do on media day. You take pictures, you show the guy holding the ball. Unfortunately, none of the guys holding the ball have the last name of Nash or Hill or Stoudemire. They're just guys in a lot of cases. I do like what they've done here in the offseason, though. I really do. They did the right thing in tanking last year. They've done the right thing, I think, in getting the Trevor Ariza deal done. They did the right thing in getting Marquise Chriss out of here. You may argue with the numbers and Ryan Anderson, all that stuff, but I just had enough of part of it is the Suns and wanting to just get everybody excited about a guy that wasn't ready to play in the NBA, Marquise Chriss. I get that. You know, announcers want to make it sound like he's the greatest person ever and on the court and can jump really high and he can't score. So what? He gets in foul trouble. Get him out of here. So I'm glad they did. Any other point guard situation, as we sit here in late September, everybody wants to, who's the point guard going to be? Oh my gosh, another point guard. They're going to find a point guard, okay? The season hasn't started yet. Give it time. Just rest, relax on that. I think the bigger story is, and this does impact the Suns indirectly, look, this is another year where the Suns are probably not going to make the playoffs. They just aren't. If you think that adding DeAndre Ayton is suddenly going to turn around the fortunes of this franchise, that's not how it works in the NBA. The NBA typically is 12 guys that are 12 different corporations with 12 different islands and 12 different agendas. That's how it is. You've got to be good enough, like Steve Kerr is, to be able to bring all those pieces together and have them play together rather than where is the decimal point and where is mine. The danger here is you have a young team. You have a young center that has a lot being thrown on his shoulders. That's just a couple of years removed from prep school, 2 years from prep school, 1 year from college. And to think that he's just going to come in and get 20 and 10, I believe is unrealistic with this team. It's not the way it works. Then you have some other pieces that don't quite fit. But the Suns are going to go through this season, and if they end up tanking again, I wouldn't be surprised. They've got to be in position for next summer. This brings me to the Jimmy Butler story. If you've missed it, Jimmy Butler says, I want out of Minnesota. He informs Minnesota that he wants a trade to the Clippers or the Knicks or the Nets, more likely to the Clippers. Jimmy Butler wants to get the $170 million deal next year, not the $90 million deal this year if he stays in Minnesota and signs an extension. It makes a lot of sense financially, but how much is too much? I mean, aren't you happy with $90 million? I don't know. But this leads to next summer's free agent crop if you are a member of the Phoenix Suns and you're looking at their front office. Next summer, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, DeAndre Jordan, Kemba Walker. I wouldn't take Kemba Walker. DeAndre Jordan, Kawhi Leonard I'd take on my team, even though I don't think he acted great in San Antonio. I just don't think it's in his DNA to be a leader, as people want him to be, the vocal leader and all that stuff. And he didn't handle the departure from San Antonio the right way. Bottom line is, the Suns are going to be in a position next summer to pursue those types of free agents. The Clippers have two max contracts. That's why Jimmy Butler wants to go that direction. I feel like if we sit here this season with the Suns and they're just good enough to maybe sneak into the playoffs, like an 8-9, if they're hanging around at 8-9-10, and you're watching them, you're going to start to root against them to make the postseason. There will be those say, oh, man, what progress. We made the playoffs. Yeah, in the West, it would really be something else. If Devin Booker came back and played as well as everybody think he's going to, and Trevor Ariza provides that veteran leadership, and DeAndre Ayton plays as well as he can play, I understand you can make that case. I'm wanting to go for the long play, which is let's stack this thing up like Golden State, and have year after year after year, and take the owner out of the equation. You can have a long run of success in the NBA if you play your cards right. If you play them wrong, as they've done here repeatedly, over and over and over, then you get stuck in this ditch of 8 years of nothing. And when you get stuck in purgatory like we are, you try not to overreact and make a bad move here, a bad move there to push them over the top. I'd like for them to be available next summer with their money to look at some of these guys. You know, go look at some of those big names that have not considered Phoenix in the past and go pursue them. So it all starts on Monday. When we get back together on Monday, we'll have much more to talk about. Goody at the Movies is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, time to turn our attention to everything on Bill Gutekunst's mind. Goody at the Movies and whatever else is happening with Bill in his life, which might include Netflix or why the Cardinals are scuffling or the Emmys or something else. Have you had any movies that have jumped out at you here that you haven't screened yet, but in the next couple of weeks, you're saying, okay, we're starting to get into that time of year where if you're releasing something in October, usually means it's not good. Or in 6 weeks, we're really going to start seeing some things ramp up for the Thanksgiving season.
Well, just for like selfish reasons, the one I'm really looking forward to is Halloween, just because I like horror movies. And I like the people who are making it, and they got Jamie Lee Curtis to come back. And it could be horrible, because most of the sequels to that movie are, but, you know, I'm there. I'll see it. I'll watch it.
Jamie Lee Curtis has got to be what, Bill, 70?
Like,
I mean, I'll still watch. Like Jamie Lee Curtis, I see A Fish Called Wanda. That's what I see. That's me.
Or Trading Places.
Trading Places.
Or Halloween. I mean, that was her first role. I mean, I love that movie, and I think it's one of the most influential movies of the 1970s. And
really?
I do, because I mean, it was the first big slasher movie, and you know, so many tried to copy it, and didn't understand it. I mean, I think they only kill like three people in the whole movie or something like that, or four. But it's just so scary. And that music that John Carpenter, the director, wrote the music and played it. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, you're just like, you know, dun, 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 dun. And I've always thought, if you will take a digression here for just a second,
sure.
I think is effective in horror movies. The movie, obviously, it takes place on Halloween because the guy, you know, the crazy Michael Myers comes home. And the scariest part of the movie to me is not when it's dark and they're all running around and killing each other stuff. It's when it's starting to get dark on Halloween and the earliest of the kids are out and it's that sort of twilight. And I don't know. It just, to me, it's like it's that anticipation of, you know, something bad is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. And I've always thought that was kind of an interesting time anyway. You know, when you're a kid, it's like, oh, it's almost time. I can finally go out. I can finally go out. And then when you're an adult, it's like, oh, I'm not home yet. Kids are already trick-or-treating. Don't open my car.
Let me go back on the Emmys then. Let's switch over to this. So I read Monday Night Football swamped the Emmys. I did not watch the Emmys. I watched a little bit of Monday Night Football. Is this another award show that we're just done with, that's outlived itself? Or was this great? I didn't see it.
It was not great. It was, by most people's accounting, just critically, everybody hated it, thought it was the worst ever. And quantifiably, it was the lowest rated ever. So, you know, I mean, you can kind of put two and two together. So, and there was not much. It was interesting. They tried all these different formats. I mean, all they're doing now is trying to get a good TV audience, and particularly a young TV audience. So they really streamlined things. They didn't have the presenters, like, name the nominees and stuff. They would... You know, this voiceover guy would do the nominees, and they'd show clips. And then they would bring the presenters out, and they would do a little banner, and then they would say, and the winner is, you know. And so it made it efficient. I don't know if it made it better, but it was, you know. And it's just interesting now. I mean, TV is so different now. A show that you have not watched, or maybe not even have heard of, can win a lot of awards just because of how we watch TV now.
Yep. No, it's like Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix and Hulu won a bunch. You know, Hulu in the past certainly has won a bunch. Amazon Prime won a bunch, and it's just like they. And I remember, I'm old enough to remember, as they say on Twitter. I can remember when there was a big outcry because The Sopranos was on HBO and it got nominated for Best Drama. And now it's like HBO is like, well, at least it's TV. You know?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. They just kind of...
It just changed so much.
Ozark, speaking of, over on Netflix, are you into this show?
I am. It's interesting, since I don't review TV shows anymore, my sole criterion for whether a show is good or not is how distracted it keeps me on the treadmill. And because I have that thing, I don't know if you do this, but like I try to hide the clock, you know, and I try to like, I force myself to go what I think is a certain amount before I let myself look at the timer.
Yep, same.
And the thing with Ozark, well, if I was going to review it as a critic, there are a lot of holes in it. There's way too many coincidences. There's some stuff, but just as like to entertain you, and that is fantastic. Man, you'll run 10 minutes without looking up, and that to me is a big victory, you know. So that's I'll take it. But Jason Bateman is really good in it, and in the second season they really empower a lot of the women, and that's kind of cool. Even though they are empowering them in major crime syndicates, but at least they're getting power, I guess. But it's just exciting and it's fun and it's entertaining. I like it a lot.
All right, so. You have no movies this week. You're just too busy.
I got no movies this week.
That's all right.
I'm getting ready, man. Like, I am perhaps I told you this already. I am the PA voice for home games for the Tempe Prep Knights.
That is awesome. That's awesome. I love that.
This is how awesome it is. In the second game, I gave two touchdowns to the wrong kid. hear me out, but Tempe Prep has blue uniforms with black numbers. It's impossible to see. And they play at Mesa Community College. And so, the press box is up there a little bit. And then my own kid, I went down after the game. He said, I recovered a fumble. Why didn't you call it out?
You screwed up your own kid.
I was like, you did?
That's awesome.
He's like, yeah. He said, the ball fell out and I fell on it.
That's awesome.
That's great.
All right. I'll let you go off that. See you later. Good stuff. There's Goody at the Movies. That's funny. There was a time where I did PA. We're going to have Lance Briggs with us here in a second. I did PA, public address announcing. My speech teacher in high school said, you need to do this. So I go out and do it. My brother's on the JV football team. And the first game I'm doing, they punt the ball towards my brother. And there's like 10 guys running down the field about ready to kill him. And all I could say to myself, I'm thinking out loud, is get away from it, stupid. Except my microphone was on. So the whole stadium heard me say, get away from it, stupid. And he looked around and he ran away from the ball. That was my moment in public address announcing. That's great that Bill does Tempe prep and the public address announcing. So the Cardinals are playing Chicago on Sunday afternoon. And whenever it is the Bears rolling into Phoenix, it's kind of like the Cubs and how they were here this past week. When the Cubs roll in, it's a Cubs convention. When the Bears roll in, it is a Bears convention. Like Sunday is going to be 75% Bears fans. And this is not unique to anybody across the country. It's just when the Cardinals aren't good, which they're not through two games, their traction is about an inch deep and a mile wide. Its fans are going to look at other teams and they're going to sell their tickets. And so the Bears fans and the Khalil Mack jerseys are going to be out in force. And there's going to be some Lance Briggs jerseys, I'm guessing, that we'll see out there. And here is Lance Briggs, the chuckle that you hear. NBC Sports Chicago, he has been with us before, seven-time Bears Pro Bowl linebacker, and, of course, former University of Arizona star. How are you, Lance?
Oh, I'm lovely.
Good.
Lovely.
Let's go off lovely as the term for the Bears. What do you love most about the Bears so far through 2 weeks?
Defense is very – it's fun to watch again. You know, Chicago's it's a defensive city. And when you turn on the TV and you see players like Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack and Danny Trevathan, Kyle Fuller, you see these guys on the field making plays and having fun, that raises the spirits of Chicagoans and Chicago Bear fans across the country.
If they didn't get Khalil Mack, would you and I be having an upbeat conversation today?
Could be. I don't think it would be as positive. You know, he brings another element. He brings a crazy element. You know, he's a guy who's an automatic face of the defense type of player. He's a former player of the year. The guy is he's an all around stud.
When they got him, what was your reaction?
The season just got more interesting.
Yeah. It wasn't no way. There wasn't no way we got Lance Briggs. We got, we got Khalil Mack light Lance Briggs. You know, there was none of that.
No. It's one of those. You know, everybody upgraded. Everybody got some pieces. Some got better. You know, in the NFC North. You know, the Vikings obviously with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And the Lions added some pieces defensively, offensively, new head coach. And of course, the Packers, they re-signed the great Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, for the Bears, it's like we did a few things, but with the Khalil Mack signing, now that put us in the running with the elite players that either have been re-signed or the new guys that have been added to those teams.
Flip it around then, if you could, Lance. So at quarterback mm-hmm. – you know, the Bears fans that I talk to, and there's a lot of them, even here in our building, there are Bears fans. They said, we've got the defense figured out. We don't trust the quarterback yet. You know, give me that spin on the offense of the Bears and a quarterback.
Everybody understands that. You know, it's the young guy who's got all the tools, but having all the tools doesn't add up to success. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been plenty of quarterbacks that have come into the NFL and with all the tools, the arm strength, you know, the seemingly know-how, but it doesn't you know, always transfer over. And so the, you know, being patient with Mitchell Trubisky is what us Bear fans, we all have to do. You know, he's in a position where you have a lot of pieces together that already working mm-hmm. for you. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to do too much. Manage games, don't turn the ball over, run the ball, throw the ball when needed and necessary, keep the defense off the field and try to get at least 3 points out of every drive.
It's kind of like having Rex Grossman back in the day, right? I mean, don't.
No. Oh, no. Very, very different. I think the idea behind him, you want him more to be more in the realm of a Kyle Orton.
Okay.
You know, when we made a good run, you know, on our way to Super Bowl, Kyle Orton didn't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. We were able to use special teams and defense to win games. You know, it's like sort of like the 2000 Baltimore Ravens.
Yep.
Trent Dilfer knew don't turn the ball
over. Screw up.
Run the ball. Yeah, there you go. Let me just manage this game.
Yeah. And the defense will do the rest. It's good stuff. Lance Briggs with us.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking U of A football, Lance, and I'm not looking just at one game, where do you see the program with Kevin Sumlin, new AD, work in progress, turning the corner, or, wow, we've got to figure out what to do with Khalil Tate, and then we'll get it turned around. What's your view of the program? Because I know you love them so much.
Absolutely. I think you're always a work in progress. Well, you're always a work in progress. You're always trying to improve. You're always trying to get better, and you're always trying to be better, be a better you, you know, a better football player than you were the day before. They're new. You know, they're new, and they're running. It's a new coordinator. It's a new system, and things are going to be a little bit different. You know, my critique is going to be just like it is for anybody else. You know, with change. For the U of A Wildcats is going to take a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very positive in seeing where the program's going to go. Do I like everything that I see? No, absolutely not. You know, but I love Marcel Yates as a defensive coordinator, and I've always been a fan of Kevin Sumlin. So you know, and talking with the players, they love him. You know, they love him already, and he didn't recruit, you know, he didn't recruit, you know, 90% of these kids, you know, and that's hard to do when you come in and you have a new coach. And I know that, you know, you have a new coach, you come in, it means a lot when the players that you didn't recruit say, you know what, I really like playing with this guy. Mm-hmm. I really like what he brings to the table.
Marcel Yates has been the target from a lot of fans so far, and you said you love him. I mean, if you were to defend Marcel Yates, what would you say to those fans?
I would say, you know, try playing defense when you're on the field, you know, for so many minutes every game.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot, you know, it's hard to be successful on defense when you're running an up-tempo Chip Kelly style offense. You know, the idea behind that Chip Kelly, that up-tempo style of offense is we're going to outscore your opponent. But the problem is if you go into a lead, you know, against BYU in the third quarter and your offense has 3-3 and outs and all of them are under a minute, that means that your defense was on the field for 12 and a half, 13 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, anybody who's played defense before knows you're going to tire out. You know, eventually you're going to tire out if you're on that field. The idea should be to protect your defense. Okay, and people say defense wins championships. Protect your defense. Keep them off the field best you can. You know, you're seeing bat change with the Sun Devils.
I still am of the opinion. I've said this publicly. I think the Territorial Cup game is going to be the winner of the Pac-12 South, and it's only this. What you're saying, Lance, to me is I agree with you. I think it's a work in progress at both places. The Pac-12 South this year is not looking strong at all, and I do believe mm-hmm. both schools have a lot of talent. I was at the BYU game. I was amazed with what Khalil was looking like as a quarterback out on the field, and yes, running mm-hmm. the defense back out and forth. I think by the time we get to November, these two teams are going to get it figured out, and that game's going to mean something
Absolutely.
Big this year. I really believe that.
Agree. I agree with you as well. You know, I think, you know, we've had some, I think from the skill position wise, I really like what U of A has. You know, I think it's going to take a little time, you know, for in the trenches, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But you know, the right guys in place, you know, right guys definitely in place, you know. And again, I'm going to go back to what I kind of reiterate what I said a little bit earlier. You know, defenses that stay on the field all day long, don't tend to be the top defenses in the country or the top 10 defenses in the NFL, you know, and I played on some top 10 defenses many years in a row. It's very tough to be on the field when you're on the field for 85, 90 plays.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. Hey, good stuff. Appreciate the time as always, Lance. Thanks.
You got it. All right.
Bye. Lance Briggs there with us with NBC Sports in Chicago, passionate U of A Wildcat. Appreciate his time and insight. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.